This evening we're going to conclude Perek Tezayin of Shoftim. That's going to be the end of Shimshon's life. Well-known period, well-known part of Shimshon, but to appreciate it slowly and every detail of it. And then next week we're going to move backwards into the overall picture, because now we've really spent a lot of time on four Prakim, and we can consider Shimshon's life as a whole as we go forward to that. So without much further ado, what I'd like to do with you is now the last Seir part of his life. Where we're standing is the following. Shimshon has told his wife, Delilah, his secret to his strength, which whether he was disclosing fully or not disclosing fully by telling the hair secret, maybe he thought that it wasn't a full disclosure at that point in time. He thought maybe it was dependent on his other elements, that he didn't drink wine as well. But be as it may, he is captured and he is blinded and he's taken to the camp of the Plishtim and imprisoned. That's where we left off, and we are told, incidentally, at the very end of what we did last time, is that in prison his hair starts to grow. Okay, so that was kind of where we left off, and now we return to our hero over here in the end of Perek Tezayin. So the part where we're going to start from over here is Perek. Tezayin Pasuk Chof Gimel. This is now where we are. Now, just an interesting point, even before we come to this, we didn't get a chance to discuss this. We are told that he was Toichein Beveis Asurin, he was grinding in the Beveis Asurin, which most of the Mepharshim understand to mean that he was put to menial labor, right? That he was obviously a very strong person. So they figured, let's make use of his strength in prison. So it was, you know, a work camp for him. But there is a chazal which is interesting, which says that in fact what happened was is that they brought their slave woman to him because they wanted to, so to speak, breed him, because they wanted to gain his supernatural strength from him, which gives a very different take on it, which is strange. Meaning to say they're trying to use his strength. They feel that they're going to maybe like channel it in some way for their people, which is a very strange thing. It's also strange because at this point in time, Shimshon is not very powerful. So the Radak is not very, pleased with that Chazal. He doesn't feel it's so tenable in the sense that he's really a weak man at this point in time. So he feels that it's more menial labor over here that he is kept in prison. What we don't know is how long this prison period is. So we may get clues as to that as we continue. Let's continue in the actual Pesukim. We're told the following in Chof Gemel. The Sarnei Plishtim Nesu Lizbar Zevach Gadol L'Dagon Eloheihem V'Lesimcha. So they get together. The Sarnei Plishtim, these are the chiefs of all the different Philistine strongholds, get together, and they are now going to have the sacrificial ceremony to their Dagon, which is their god. Dagon keeps coming up. It sounds very much like, right? Dagon sounds much like. What? Right, it feels like it's like a fish. And of course, we should be wary, aware that the Philistines are seafaring people. So, their god is obviously very closely related to the fish. It might be in a fish form, in fact. Later on, we meet him at the beginning of Sefer, or later on in Sefer Shmuel, where the Aaron is, where the idol of the fish falls in front of the Aaron. We're going to see that later. So they have their god over here. Vayamru, Nosan Elokeinu Biyodeinu Es Shimshon Oyevenu. Our gods, our powers are given in our hands. Shimshon, our enemy. So it sounds like this. What's stimulating this feast is the capture. So it sounds like this feast is somewhat close, right? In terms of time, we're not given the times, but it sounds like it's like coming straight off of what happened, or somewhat straight off. This is the feast that they have, and. How do they describe him? Their way of describing Shimshon is now Oyvenu. He's our enemy. So they've finally come to the realization that Shimshon is no longer just, you know, a rowdy person in society. He's actually really an enemy, right? So now he's the enemy of the state, which is an important transition from there for them. They see him and they praise their god. They said, our god gave in our hands our enemy, the destroyer of our land, and the person who accumulated much of our corpses. There's two last phrases in the sentence.
What did really happen?
What happened?
He says that et machriv arzeinu, which he didn't do.
Well, let's think about that. Did he destroy the land? He burnt. He did burn down the fields. And Shir Hibas Chalaleinu.
Is not the fields. Arzeinu is
No, I think it makes a little. When we talk about destroying land, you talk about the burned earth campaign. You know, meaning you're making their land useless. They were in the middle of the Katsir, they're in the middle of the harvest, and he destroys them. I think that's what they're getting out of here is that they're talking about everything they put their work into, a whole year's worth of work and food. Gone, and Hirbaz Chalaleinu, we certainly saw that he killed masses upon masses of Philistines. So this is I think they're directly relating to the episodes of Shimshon's anger.
Is it possible this hyperbole here?
Possible, but I don't know if you need to. I don't know if you need to. Right over here, we've seen in Shimshon's life, he's done all of this. He's killed people. Mm-hmm. He is mounds of corpses, 1,000 people with one donkey jaw. You know, 300 foxes destroying all the fields around. He's really done everything they've said. Vayihi ketov libam. When their hearts were good, what does that usually mean? Right, exactly. Ketov lev hamelech bayayin, right? As we're about to read in 2 weeks' time, when ketov lev hamelech means when his heart is good, doesn't mean to say that he's feeling very benevolent. Ketov lev hamelech means to say when the alcohol content has reached beyond capacity. The vayomer kiru l'shimshon v'yisachek lanu. Bring in front of us Shimshon, and he should laugh in front of us. And they brought him in front of him, and they made him, make fun in front of them, and they put him in between the pillars. Now, what is he actually doing? Meaning, what's Shimshon actually doing for them? Is he, this is not stand-up comedian over here. This is what's really going on.
Well,
they want.
If he's trying, then obviously.
Okay, so maybe just even the fact that he's there and he's, stumbling around is funny to them. It might just be, the fact that you have this crippled man here who's, because they've maimed him and the fact that he's just, the way he is so powerless now might be there. What's funny to them?
But they're invoking the name of their gods, and so it's like a spiritual and nationalistic triumph.
Right, for sure, no question. So for them, this is theologically very good, right? Which is going to come. We have to come around to when we analyze the end of them. But in terms of the schoik itself, it sounds like it sounds like. Well, the Metzudas David says something interesting. He says, Shimshon, why did you tell us all your great stories about your triumphs? Meaning, Shimshon, you tell us how great you were, and to them that's extremely funny because. They're watching the man, this is the Hercules in chains, this is the man who had all this, and it's ironic, and they're laughing because he can't do anything about it anymore. That's what the Mitzvot David says, which is interesting. But if you look very carefully into the actual words, you'll see there's a difference in what they ask him to do and what he does. Right? They ask him, what do they ask him to do? V'yisachek lanu, right? And then what does he actually do? V'yitzachek lifnehem. Now, you might think to yourself, okay, they both sound like laughter, they both sound like, being jovial. But the Malbim, who's always very particular on these things, the Malbim throughout Tanakh consistently goes through and with a very fine comb notes all the differences in words. And he says that when a person is sochek with a sin. So, misachek, it means to say that there's an inner sense of happiness. There's an inner sense of, overflowing laughter. Mitzachek is when a person is causing others to laugh, is when there's the laughter is outside, like mitzachek by Yishmael and other instances in Tanakh, but it's not internal. It isn't something which resonates internally. And so what's happening over here is they're saying, what's happening for them is that they're being enlightened. They're guffawing over this whole scene. But Shimshon is doing the actions, but it's to him it's a empty and painful experience. So he is being metzachek, and everybody else is just the audience. But he is not laughing in the same way, which is part of the sadness of this. Actually, just out of interest, just this morning on the topic, I was at a Sheva Brachas, and there was a person had two two of those Chinese, what do they call them, fortune cookies. So he pulled out the messages, and I just thought about this as anyone came to Shimshon. The one said, the person who learns to laugh at himself will never cease to be amused. And the second one following it says, you soon will be surrounded by good friends and laughter. The two, one after the other, which is very funny that he got the two together. But I was thinking about it, is that what Shimshon has over here, says the Malbim, is he only has the people around him laughing. But he's empty in himself, right? So that's what's happening over here, is that he's empty of, he's devoid of any form of, it's all surrounding him. So now what happens? So, Vayomer Shimshon al ha'nar ha'machzik b'yadoi. And Shimshon turns to the lad who's holding his hand. Why does he need a lad to hold his hand? You can't see, right? So listen to me, right? He needs to have somebody who's directing him. Hanicha asi v'hamisheni el ha'amudim. He says, please help me find the what was that? Et ha'amudim. Please help me find or grope or like hold on to these pillars. Asher abayis nachon aleihem. The house is supported by ve'esho'en aleihem, and I will lean on them. Now, why from the boy's perspective, why is he doing this?
To be nice. But why
is Shimshon asking from the boy's perspective? Right, meaning it's an expression of weakness, right? Because here he is, you know, he's exhausted. He's just been, you know, whatever his whole routine that they've been goading him on in the center of everything. And so this is an expression of weakness, which is the irony of what's about to happen over here. And finally, he says that we're told a note by the narrator. We're told that va'bayis maleha anashim va'anashim, this house, this area is completely full of men, of women. The shama kol sarnei plishtim, and there are all the leaders of the Philistines, all the chiefs. Va'alagag kishloshes alafim ish v'isha haro'im b'schok Shimshon, and there are 3,000 people, men and women, on the roof watching Shimshon. By the way, that's in addition. That's the schok as well, but it's in addition to the people downstairs, right? So just to get a sense of this. This is not a small party. This is a huge gathering. I mean, just think about it being a room with, you know, you, when you go on some of these missions, you know, 1,500 people. It feels like a lot of people. 3,000 people, and that's just the upper tier, right? There's a lot of people over here in this house. Vayikra Shimshon el Hashem, and Shimshon calls out to God. Vayomer, and he says, Hashem, God, Zochreinina, remember me, please. V'chazkenina, strengthen me, please. Acha pama zeh, just this one time. Again, pama is very important in Shimshon's life because we've seen the word that the way that God operates with Shimshon is, we were introduced to him, is that Hashem is lefa'amo. Hashem is like, is sometimes in front of him, sometimes not in front of him. And that's the way that he interacts with Shimshon his whole entire life. That's the word we saw at the beginning of his life. So he's saying, please make this the last time that you really come back to me. That our relationship's there again. God, and he says, please let me take one more revenge for my two eyes from the Philistines. This is a very popular song in Israel today. Yeah, so he says, well, from one of my two eyes. So he's choosing one of his eyes. It's a very complex pasuk to understand. Very complex pasuk to understand over here. Yeah, as I was saying, in Eretz Yisrael, this is a very popular song because it has the notion of revenge and the Pelishtim. You know, this today, whether rightly or wrongly so, is taken into in a different context.
I'm just curious, what's the tune of the song?
Maybe after this year we'll do a routine. Yeah, because it's the reason I'm mentioning that is because this is an interesting point to consider in general is revenge, you know, and certainly in Israeli society today as well, you know, do you encourage, do you discourage, do you turn a blind eye to? We're going to come back to that next week a little bit because Shimshon sets up an interesting paradigm over here of revenge being a very forefront element in his life, which is important. And how we relate to that today. You know, this is a very important point. But let's just concentrate. There's a lot of very strange things going on over here. One thing just to think about very first and foremost is, what's the calculus over here? You know, there's a calculation he's saying, is that, God, if you grant this for me and it's one eye, then we're going to have, then please let me Sam have revenge against the Philistines.
Maybe
very strange,
have a lot more
right? So
that.
Maybe, well, maybe, but the eyes. Why?
Both. He's only offering one.
He's only offering one of them. So Rashi says says something very interesting.
It's also.
Let's I want us to get the two Pirushim in Rashi, and then let's reconsider. Rashi says the following. Rashi says that his request to God is that he never took advantage of the community. He said, look, as a leader, I was the kind of person who never asked anybody, I didn't even borrow anything from people. I didn't ask people to serve me as a leader. So in the schus of the fact that I didn't ever abuse my leadership, please save me now. That's Rashi offers as one opportunity, understanding. And the other idea that he offers is that he quotes the Midrash, and the Midrash says that he says, take one eye for now and one eye for the future. Meaning, God, I was blinded from my two eyes. Take the one eye for this revenge and one eye for the future. And this is a very enigmatic Rashi on both levels. Both elements that Rashi is trying to convey to us seem very strange, very, very closed books. So I'd like to just think with you just in two regards, some very interesting thoughts. Number one is the Chida, a Sephardi halachist, Kabbalist, who lived a century and a half ago, very, very incredible, prolific leader, really interesting stories told about him. So he tells an interesting story. He says there was a man, there was a tzaddik, who was, I think his name was Chacham Kasufi, and he knew of him, and this person was a dayan in Egypt. He was a leader, a court leader in Egypt. And what happened was that he went blind one day. And what people were saying was that, you know why this dayan went blind? Was because he accepted a bribe. They said he must have accepted a bribe. Why would people say that?
It's in the Chumash.
Where does it say it?
I know it's in the Chumash. We just said
it's mentioned twice. Once in the last week's parasha Mishpatim, once later on Dvarim Ki Ashochad, because a blind Yaver and Epikrim. The Torah says that a bribe will blind the eyes of those who see. Which now what does that pasuk really mean? The pasuk really means Alpi Pshat is that if you take a bribe, you will be blinded psychologically from being able to make a pristine judgment. That's what the Torah means. However, what people were saying is mystically, what must have happened over here is this fellow over here must have taken a bribe, and that's why he was punished with blindness. That's what they were saying about him. And he was a very pure individual. And he made a public announcement, and he said that if it's true that it was in fact because I took a bribe, then I should remain blind my whole life. But if it's not true, I should regain my sight. And the Chidah says, I saw his signature in the days of his blindness, and there was a signature of broken handwriting. And I saw his signature as he signed it afterwards when he regained his sight, and it was a pure, clear letter. Meaning he's saying, from my own experience, I saw the fact that this man was healed from his blindness. Why was he granted that miracle? Why was this? And by the way, with the people in the rings of the Chidah, there are miraculous stories told about these individuals, very unusual stories. And there was a whole, in those days, in the North Africa area, where there was, where the Orachaim lived beforehand, people like this, these are the tremendously miraculous individuals. And so he said that the reason why God created that miracle that he was able to see again was to prove to those people that it in fact wasn't him abusing his power. That's the reason why that he was granted that. So now, take.
Publicly ask for a miracle that's a true miracle like that.
Very good question. I don't know. I'm not going to spend too much time on the. You're right. It's do we ask for miracles? Do we rely on zechuyos for miracles? Not so simple. But what is interesting to consider about this story is perhaps over here is what's going on. Shimshon has the office of, well, technically is. He's a shofet, he's a person of responsibility in the community, to whatever degree we're going to give him. But he's a person of office and stature. So what's going to happen is he goes blind. He's blinded by these Philistines. So what could people be saying? What are they saying that the reason is? They say because he must have been, you know, embezzling. He was lining his pockets. He was doing whatever he needed to do. Now, we know, say Chazal, that the reason why his eyes were blinded was essentially because he was running after his eyes. Chazal say that the reason why he was blinded was because there were three Philistine ladies in his life, and he seemed to be running after everyone he saw. So what happens over here is that at the end of his life, what Rashi is trying to say, perhaps, is the following. He's saying, save me from one of my eyes, meaning God, grant me the revenge for one of those eyes so that people should never think, because I was never that type of leader. I never even asked people so much as to borrow something or for somebody to move around my possessions because I'm a judge. Meaning, let it be clear that the reason why I was blinded and this happened to me was not because of how I treated the community. It was my own personal struggle, which it wasn't to do with my jurisdiction. Therefore, it's only one eye. He asks for the healing of, not the healing, but the avenge or the God giving the stamp of approval of one eye so people should realize in the same way that it wasn't that. That's what Rashi perhaps is saying. Very fascinating option. But let's delve a little deeper. The second thing he says that Rashi suggests is that maybe the reason is because he says, I want one eye for this world and one eye for the next world, which is strange because the blinding of his eyes isn't a source of zuchuyos, right? It isn't a source of merit. It's a source of suffering, right? So how's he trading that off? Someone said a very interesting story, which is just worthwhile considering in the bigger scheme of things. He says there's a fellow who passes away, and he is going through a long tunnel, and there's a long tunnel with the light at the end, and he's walking along, and it's obviously apocryphal, but the message is very deep. And he's walking along, and he hears this tremendous rumbling behind him. Now, the whole ground starts shaking. He turns around, and they're coming down the tunnel behind him on these 18-wheelers, pitch black 18-wheelers. And as far as I can see down the tunnel, there are trucks. And they come, and he flags down the first one, and he says, what is this? So he says, this is your Averus. We're taking your Averus to the scale of justice. And he says, well, can I catch a ride? He says, sorry, there's no space. There's no space over here, not even in the second driver's seat. We're full. And he says, any of the trucks? Sorry. And he keeps on going and going and going, a good 7 minutes, and all the trucks pass him. And he's feeling terrible now. So he carries on walking and walking, and the tunnel's endless, and he hears a little splatter and a clatter. And there, driving down the tunnel, is a white, the old Volkswagens, one of those old buggies is coming along, and he flags him over and he says, what is this? And he says, oh, we're carrying your mitzvahs. He says, any space? He says, sure, they're in a little shoebox on the back seat of the car. And he gets into the car and he drives off and they get to this large set of scales, and there in the scales they're loading up all the Averos onto the one side, and then they throw the shoebox onto the other side. And the man's feeling terrible now. And then, just as he feels at the end of the show, he hears another rumbling in the background, and he sees a line of purple trucks coming. Huge line of purple trucks. And it takes even 20 minutes for the purple trucks to arrive, and they start unloading and unloading and unloading. They put all their wares on the side of the white shoebox. And he says, what is this? And they say, well, that's the suffering you endured in your life. And what the story was saying, what the story is meant to investigate and is that sometimes that a person may not have all the schuyos, but the suffering that a person endures is something which is of merit to that person. And so now, so what's happening over here is Shimshon may be saying is that I suffered the loss of two eyes. He says that was unspeakable suffering that I had to go through and the life I had to leave after that. But I'd like to use the suffering, the schus that was generated from that, for this. But I don't want to use the rest of it for the world to come. Otherwise, anyway. So just worth considering, because it's very hard to understand how Rashi is trying to take how Shimshon is playing bargain games with eyes that he lost. What he's trying to achieve over here, which is very fascinating. Yes. Okay.
I was telling another story, which happens to be a true story. I heard about a Holocaust survivor who said when he died, he wanted to be buried in his
socks.
No, in the uniform of the Auschwitz or whatever, what they wore, the pajama thing. And the rabbi asked him why. He says, because when I go before Hashem, this should be enough to get me.
Oh, wow.
Right.
In reference to what she said, because it says here Elohim, which is the God of justice.
Yes.
He's putting that with his conditioning for the eye, which is going with what you're saying. It's saying he feels it's just to make this bargain. Because
correct.
Even though it could be me to connect me to what he suffered, what it was greater than what he...
Correct. Correct.
He didn't just lose his sight.
Correct. Correct.
He was tortured.
No question. Yeah, no question. So, but it still is a... This comes back to what you were mentioning beforehand, is that one has to be very careful when using up zchuyos, meaning that's why Chazal frown on people who request miracles, because it does take up merit. And so it's much better not to rely on miracles. What he's doing over here is he's essentially spiritually trading something. He's losing something for this.
Does he get his vision back?
No, he does. He
does or he doesn't?
He does, but the point is that this is about to...
He does. Otherwise, we keep going back and forth.
Very good. I'm so glad that we have moderators in this in this shiur, you know.
So then how does it solve his problem?
Meaning to say that he was vindicated because of that. Meaning
but
this,
if he dies without getting his sight back, how does that...
His loss of sight, he has generated a vindication which was supernatural, as you're about to see. That's what he's achieving with this now. He says the following. Let's pull this to its close, and let's think about a few other things quickly. He says the following. In Chavtes, Vayilfos Shimshon Eshnei Amudei HaTavech Asher Abayis Nachon Aleihem Vayisamech Aleihem Echad Bimino VeEchad BiSmola. He grabs these two pillars that the building is dependent on, one in the right and one in the left. And Vayomer Shimshon Tamos Nafshi Im Plishtim. Let my soul, or let my spirit die with the Philistines. Vayet Bechoyach Vayipol Habayis Al Asranim. And he pulls it down, they all fall down, and the Tanakh tells us that he killed more people in this instance than he killed in his entire life, which is remarkable. I mean, because there's so many people he did kill. And Vayirdu Echov v'kol beis avihu, and this is the sad end, then his brothers, apparently he had siblings, or at least close family, and the house of his father, by Yisrael, so they took him, and they buried him in his father's plot. So it's clear that sometime in his life his father had passed away. We don't know of that. He judged Israel for 20 years. Let's consider a few things over here. So we don't know who his brothers are, but it seems close, you know, at least close family. But Tanakh is telling us a lot of very interesting things over here. So first of all, is that Hashem does respond, meaning Hashem does respond to him, because even though God has left him and God was not with him when his hair was cut, Hashem does rejoin him, and Hashem does release his request. But there's a few things to think about. Number one is that I heard Dina mentioning this just a second ago, is that this is essentially suicide. And the Rambam says very clearly, and this halacha really always made me think, is that a person who takes his soul is mischayev benafsha, Ram says.
I thought you're allowed to if you're in a situation where you're going to be killed.
Okay, so that's the question over here. Is the Rambam in general says that a person who Rahman al-Islam takes their life is mischayev benafsha, is somewhat responsible for their life. Meaning to say that there's a certain debt they hold. They weren't in charge of. They weren't given the charge to take it or not. They have to. We are expected to live out our lives. So the discussion is had, and I've not seen it in a halachic, but I've seen it in the Meforshim. The Manoes describes many of the different Meforshim who question this in Shimshon as well. Some of them say, like you're saying, Karen, is that in fact, you know what, over here he was acquitted because he was evidently going to be killed at some point, if not now, very soon. Right? So this was an instance where it was, what he was doing was, his death was simply being much more powerful and being used for something. But it should be noted that he does quote the Zohar, who says that he was punished. This wasn't appropriate to even go that far. So it is under debate as to, we don't know, but it is under debate as to the permissibility of this. But there's another element to consider over here, is that on the one hand, God is responding to Shimshon, but on the other hand, God is also responding to the situation. Okay, because I think this was mentioned beforehand. Think about this over here. This is the greatest chil Hashem which could possibly be, Here you have the Philistines who rule over all of Israel. They've had everybody under their thumb, and then there's this individual who just doesn't go with the program, right? And he whatever they try to do, he kills more of them, and he's indestructible. And finally, this person who is this leader of the nation of Israel is captured, blinded, made fun of. They're sacrificing to their gods. This is it. Meaning, this is the ultimate. You would call it this worldly expression of the fact that the Hebrews are rejected theologically and spiritually. That's what it looks like. So says the Ralbag, when God's responding, he's responding to Shimshon, but he's also responding to the situation as well, which is important to take note of here. Shimshon is asking to be the vehicle of that. Shimshon saying, look, I can't stand not just this, but this. I can't stand the whole, what's going on around me. I can't live in a context in which I am the way that people are now pointing fingers at the God of Israel. So what happens? God responds to him, but God responds to the situation using him, which is what happens over here. So the Rabbi, I think that's a very important nuance in the situation over here in terms of God's response. The question which is a little bit glaring in the end is, what's the problem with this last pasuk over here? At the very end. Is that just to recap? There are four prakim dealing with Shimshon. First one is his birth. Second one is the early life. Third one is his the second one is his early life and marriage and the breakup of his first marriage. Second, the third parak is describing his fight with in Yehuda and he's being turned over to the Philistines and succeeding. At that point, it says that he was a shofet. After three prakim, it tells him he was a shofet for 20 years. Right, that was in Perek. Where is it, Barbara?
15.
Okay, so it's the last pasuk of Perek Tesvav, one Perek back. It tells us that he judged Israel for 20 years. Then we have another whole chapter of his life where he went and there was the house of the Zona in Azza, and then we talked about his whole Delilah episode and this, and now suddenly the Tanakh tells us again that he was a shofet for 20 years. So which was it? Meaning, what's going on over here? When? How many years? Was it two sets of 20 years? Was it one set of 20 years? If so, why repeat? So, very complicated. Mepharshim really struggle with this. The Radak suggests that, you know what, maybe, really, 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 all shoftim need to end their lives with the recapping, the epilogue of, this is what they did. But in Shimshon's case, the last part of his life was not so beautiful. So what Tanakh does is Tanakh gives us the regular ending, the regular epilogue of his life, but then Tanakh reverses one chapter and says, but the work that he did was all earlier on. Meaning the last part of his career, Tanakh doesn't want to give the approval of at the end of his life. So Tanakh stamps it twice to almost exclude this last chapter of his life, because he dies very ignobly, which is over here at the end. However, there is another way of looking at this, and this is an interesting medrash, which now the Mepharshim quote, and the medrash says that, you know why it says it 20 years? Because he judged for 20 years actively alive, but even when he died, there was such a reign of terror, there was such a psychological fear which he instilled in the Philistines that they didn't start up with the nation of Israel for another 20 years posthumously. So what's this last pasuk saying over here? Is that he judged in his death, in his grave, he judged and led Israel. Now let's take this a little further. Notice something interesting. If you have a building of the proportions that we're talking, where you have just 3,000 people on the second tier, and it collapses, what is the likelihood that they're going to be able to retrieve the body? Unfortunately, when you see these kind of things happening when you hear about these earthquakes, Rahman al-Nisan, in all corners of the world, you know, it's weeks of digging. It's terrifying what happens when things collapse. So here you have a whole thing, and it sounds like the next post, like everybody comes in, whips away the body, and goes backwards, and buries him. So it's very strange. What might be the clue to this is the following. I'll take a comment and then I want to come back to this. Yeah.
Are you done?
No, I'm not done. But
because I have a theory, so you finish.
Okay, so let me pull full circle then. So what I'd like to just recap on is the brachas of Yaakov Avinu for just a moment. Yaakov Avinu gives a bracha to each tribe and each of his sons, not a tribe yet, but each of his sons, and he says something unique about each of them in their characteristics. And the words he says is in Parshas Vayechi is the following. I'm just going to read the words. It's very, very short. It's three psukim. One is, Don Yadin Amoike Achad Shiftei Yisrael. Don is going to be a judge among the brothers, like one of the tribes of Israel. Okay, why is that important? Why is it significant to tell us that he's going to be like the brothers of Israel? Don is a child he's the first child of a maidservant. Mm-hmm. So Yaakov is saying, you're going to be a judge, you're going to have people coming out of you who are going to be judges, just like everybody else. Okay, number one. Then he says, he don nachash alei derech. Don is going to be a snake on the road, shefifon alei orach, a viper on the path. I know all this because we are forced, that was what it felt like in third grade, when we were forced to memorize all the brachas of Yaakov Avinu. So we had this all down pat at age 9. So he says, "Noshech ikve sus vaypol rachu achar," that bites the hoof of the leg of the horse, and the rider falls backwards. Liyishua sakivisi Hashem, and in your salvation, God, I trust. This is what Yaakov Avinu says to him. Very enigmatic, very hard to pinpoint. How is done like a snake? So what a lot of the Mefarshim say, what Rashi says right over there, is it's referring directly, one-to-one, to Shimshon. It's referring to Shimshon specifically, and that is in the following way, is that Dan is like that snake who bites the horse. Meaning, here you have the power. Every leader of the Philistine state is gathered together. There's no way that one person who's unarmed in chains is going to be able to topple that rider. And so what happens? But he's able to bite at the ikveh asus. He's able to bite at the heel which supports everything. And by doing so, he's able to topple the power, the most powerful. So Don is like that viper on the road. But embedded in that bracha is something interesting. How does the rider fall? The rider falls backwards. So what is suggested? I've seen suggested is that the rider falls in a way which doesn't hurt the snake. The rider falls. The rider is toppled. The rider is killed. But the rider is falled in such a way that it doesn't kill the snake, and doesn't harm the snake in the same way. And so what I've seen suggested is that the reason why they're able to find his body is that although he pulls it down and he dies in the equation, that it falls in such a way that he is not crushed or lost. And therefore, when his family come back to this pandemonium, this chaos, they're able to very easily find his body because it moved in a certain direction as the building fell. And because they take his body, what happens is a very interesting thing. And this comes back to the end over here. And that is that when the rest of the Philistines start searching through the rubble, and they search through thousands and thousands of bodies, and they don't find Shimshon, what do they think? They think that Shimshon still lives. And for another 20 years, they live in fear. Why? Because they never found the body, which was it would have been impossible to retrieve otherwise. So part of the bracha of Yaakov, yeah, he was probably killed in the rubble, but to such an extent that it was easy for him to be found. So the suggestion is that yes, the reason why there was this fear is because he was the missing man. Why? Coming back to that original subtle bracha of Yaakov Avinu. I want to just make one last point, and if that's all right, and then we'll just close. And that is that the Midrash comments on the last pasuk of Yaakov Avinu's bracha, and that is Lishuascha Kivisi Hashem. In your salvation, I trust God. That's the one of the shortest pasukim in the Torah, and it's said regarding Dan. And specifically, and I'm going to hone in and say that it's referring to Shimshon, because somehow, says the Midrash, and the Midrash says the following, Kevon Shiro Yaakov Gvuroso Shel Shimshon. Yaakov saw this immense strength that Shimshon had. Omar Lishoso Kivisi Hashem, Fishi Shimshon Echel Yeshias Yisrami Aplishtim. He thought that he began to save him. And he says, and the Midrash doesn't say explicitly, but he saw in Dan the potential of Mashiach. And then when he saw him in the future dying, he says, Lishuasa kivisi Hashem. I still await the continued redemption, which Shimshon may have started, but was not able to finish. And so what we're going to consider next week, the next part of our discussion is going to be, is the messianic potential that Shimshon had. Because if you look at him, it seems to us that Shimshon is a rather difficult character. There's a lot of very difficult elements of his life, considering everything. Next week, what we're going to say is to take a look at his life as a whole and what he was thinking, what God was thinking, what people were thinking as we try to analyze him as a whole.